All right, folks, if you wouldn't mind grabbing your seats, we're going to go ahead and get started out of respect for your time. It is 6 o'clock.
I thought so, too.
Yes, where is everybody?
Thaddeus, could you make us a host on the webinar so that we can see him? Can you make us a panelist on the Zoom webinar?
We are.
How many folks you got on? Okay, great. Well, we've got a decent-sized group here. We also have about 20 folks joining us online on Zoom, so we do have a pretty good crowd in totality with both of those groups. So my name is Michael Spaeth. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a principal planner with the town of Oro Valley, and I'm serving as the facilitator for tonight's meeting. As facilitator, my role is to ensure that we have a fair and efficient conversation tonight. We want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to make their voice heard, should they choose to. We want to address any questions and comments that you might have. Of course, I hopefully will, at the end of the meeting, have talked us through a conversation about hopefully identifying some design solutions that can be worked in. If possible, that can alleviate some of the concerns that you may have about the applicant's proposal. So I hope you grabbed the ground rules as you walked in. They're also on the screens behind us here and on the screen for those of you folks on Zoom at home. Essentially, what they boil down to is just please be respectful. Be respectful of other participants in the room as well as on Zoom. Be respectful of the applicant and be respectful of staff as well, so that, again, we can have that efficient meeting tonight. So quickly, just some housekeeping things. For those of you who aren't familiar with Town Campus, we do have some restrooms and drinking fountains out the doors you came in to the right, should you need those. If you haven't already silenced your cell phones, please do so out of respect for other participants in the room. For those of you on Zoom, your mics will remain muted throughout the presentations, and we'll provide more information later on how we'll interact with you during the question and answer period. Can I see a show of hands of folks here who received a yellow postcard for tonight's meeting? Great. Okay, so a pretty good percentage of you. So what that means is you're already on our notification list for this project, so you will continue to be notified of upcoming meetings moving forward. If you didn't receive a yellow postcard, and hopefully you signed in on the way in, you will also be added to that notification list. So you, again, will be notified of all those projects moving forward. There's one resource I would like to point you all to if you're not familiar with it yet. It's called ovprojects.com. It's a town-hosted website that this project has its own webpage on. There's a lot of information on there. As we receive updated information from the applicant, we will continuously upload it on there so you folks can stay as informed as we are as new submittals come in. We are scheduled to go till 7:30 tonight. Of course, staff and the applicant are always willing to hang out later if there are more questions or comments any folks might have not had the opportunity to have addressed during the meeting. So I would like to remind folks that it is the property owner's request. It is not the town's request, though we are required to provide due process. Because it's their request, they are solely charged with seeking and getting approval from town council for their request. So where are we in the process? It helps if that was on. So, of course, we're at the second neighborhood meeting for the project known as Avila West. Hopefully most of you viewed the informational video that was posted back November of last year, and, of course, we had the first neighborhood meeting in December. Can I see a show of hands again of folks who were in that first meeting? Oh, okay. So not quite as many as we would have expected. So we'll make sure that we're as thorough as possible on our presentations tonight. So we do have a formal submittal from the applicant since that neighborhood meeting, and we've been working with them on achieving code compliance before we brought you all back together for the applicant to go through their revisions and show you their updated proposal. So after tonight, the application does require consideration by the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council, so those will be the next steps moving forward. So for tonight's agenda, Miss Hannah Oden is a senior planner with the town, and she's the town's primary staff reviewer for the applicant's proposal, is going to provide a brief overview of the project. Then we'll turn it over to Mr. Olin, representing the property owner, to again go into more detail about the revised site plan that has changed since that first neighborhood meeting. And then thirdly, most importantly, we're going to turn it over to you, and we're going to have a question and answer period, kind of round robin format. If you would please bear with us, we are instituting a hybrid form meeting with folks on Zoom. So to make sure that we're equal and fair for everybody, both in person and on Zoom, we will be bouncing back and forth. So I appreciate your patience on that. I would like to reiterate that this is the opportunity to have the most impactful change on the application. Early in the process is really the time to have effectual change on the project. So please, we need your help. Help us in that dialogue this evening. You may hear some comments and thoughts from other participants that you agree with. Sometimes there's applause that occurs. We would ask that you refrain from that, please, just because it is disruptive to the conversation. If you want to say, I agree with what they said, that's perfect. And of course, any inappropriate actions will not be tolerated. So on the screen on number three there is kind of a summary of the key issues and topics that were brought up during that first neighborhood meeting. Of course, that list is not exhaustive. There are other ones, but those were kind of the primary topics that were brought up. So we're going to ask the applicant, we're going to ask the applicant to go through each of these as part of their presentation on how their revised design addresses those. And then lastly, we'll finish up again with some next steps and other opportunities to stay involved. I am going to hand it off to Ms. Oden for her presentation, but I will ask, please hold questions until the presentations are done. I promise we'll have time to get to almost all of them. So, Ms. Oden.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Can everyone hear me okay? All right. Excellent. Thank you. So I want to start off by just orienting everyone with respect to the subject property. So the property is approximately 15 acres and vacant. It's shown here outlined in yellow on this slide. It is north of Tangerine Road, south of Woodburn Avenue, and west of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. The Reflections neighborhood is located to the north, just across Woodburn Avenue, and then the Golder Ranch Fire Station is located kind of by the northwest corner of the property. So I also want to provide an overview of the, kind of some background maybe, of the Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development, or you might hear me refer to it as a PAD. So this was adopted by Town Council in 1987. And the original zoning map is shown here on the right side of the slide, which does include the subject parcel. You can see it on the kind of very southern part of the map. It's called out with a little yellow star. So that's what established the existing C1 commercial zoning that the property has today. So again, that's what how the property got its entitlements for commercial zoning, and it's been that way since 1987. So the applicant is proposing to rezone the property from C1 commercial to high density residential. And that is shown on the right-hand side of the slide with those two images. High density residential is the same zoning as the Reflections neighborhood, which again is located north across Woodburn Avenue. There's two tables on this slide. The top one is a comparison of permitted uses both within the existing commercial zoning and within the high-density residential zoning. So permitted uses under the existing commercial zoning would be for things such as grocery stores, retail, restaurants, and offices. Permitted uses under a high-density residential zoning designation would be things like apartments, even single-family homes, townhomes, and offices as well. The table on the below that, so on the lower side of the slide, that's a comparison of development standards, again, between the existing C1 commercial zoning and the proposed high-density residential zoning. So just to go through those pretty quickly, so the building setback, you can see the difference there from Woodburn Avenue. Commercial zoning would be 25 feet. With this high-density residential zoning, since that's the rear of the property, it'd be 5 feet. The buffer yards are also a little different. Commercial zoning requires a 30-foot buffer yard, whereas high-density residential zoning would require a 15-foot buffer yard. The building height is the same for both zoning districts, which is up to 34 feet or three stories. And the open space is also a little different. High-density residential zoning would require 30% meaningful open space, where commercial zoning would require 10% open space of the land area. So this slide shows on the left-hand slide, the upper left, that is the original concept plan that was presented to neighbors during the first neighborhood meeting back in December. The revised plan is shown kind of on the lower right side of the slide, which is what is being presented tonight for discussion and feedback. So the applicant is proposing 118 single-family rental homes. They're a mix of one, two, and three-bedroom homes. The site plan includes recreation areas, parking. There's also a multi-use path along the southern property boundary. Proposed access is from Tangerine Road with a new via a new collector road, and access is also proposed off from Woodburn Avenue. There is a proposed realignment of Woodburn, and the applicant will go over that, as well as additional details of the site plan during their presentation. Now, I do want to make it clear that what we're discussing tonight is part of a larger overall Avila development. So there's another part of this project, which is located, it's known as Avila East, and it's located across Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, just north of the Safeway Shopping Center. So total, both developments total approximately, or they'll total 205 single-family rental homes. They're single-story, again, a mix of one, two, and three-bedroom, both attached and detached homes. Both of these are being processed under separate applications with separate neighborhood meeting processes. So tonight the focus is on the Avila West development. So there are key elements of staff review when we review any rezoning application. So we review for conformance with the Your Voice, Our Future general plan, review for neighborhood compatibility and compatibility with the surrounding area, potential grading and drainage impacts, compliance with the town zoning code, as well as potential impacts from traffic and access. As Mr. Spaeth mentioned earlier, here's just a list of key concerns that we heard at the first neighborhood meeting. So these include traffic impacts and safety, again, compatibility with the surrounding area, specifically with noise, potential impact to nearby property values, and future maintenance of this development. Any community benefit from the development, that was a question. Potential environmental concerns related to water, drainage, impacts to wildlife, and as well as just an overall change from commercial to residential. So, of course, concerns and questions tonight are not limited to this list, but they have been given to the applicant so they can address this during their presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Oden. Now I'd like to turn it over to the applicant's representative, Mr. Paul Olin, for his presentation.
Good evening. My name is Paul Oland. I'm here representing the property owner and the developer, Next Metro. Just really briefly, for those of you who were not at the first meeting, I know there's been some confusion about Next Metro versus Avila. Avila Homes started in Tucson a number of years ago. They really pioneered this development format, which is basically a rental casito, a rental cottage. It is a higher density rental option, but it gets people away from that more typical two- and three-story garden court format that you see. There's several examples along Oracle where there's like eight units per floor, two or three floors. So the buildings are much bigger. So similar densities, but without those big, massive buildings. And they actually command higher rents. That said, so Avila did start in Tucson. That development format has really spread to Phoenix, and it's spreading nationwide because it's such a popular development format, especially given the nationwide housing crunch that we're in. The brand was acquired by Next Metro, which is a company out of Phoenix. It is separate and distinct from Avila. So Avila, they acquired basically, like I said, the brand, because that's the format. However, the Avila developments that are in Tucson are not Next Metro developments. They were developed before Next Metro acquired Avila. They were not developed to the same standards or have a lot of the same design criteria. So when Next Metro acquired Avila, their concept was basically, here's this really successful, popular, demanded format where people have another option for where and how to live. But they knew that it could be improved upon, it could be tuned up, it could be adjusted, and amenities could be increased, finishes could be increased, and ultimately project values could be increased because that's you know how it all works. So I just wanted to make that distinction there because I know that came up at the last meeting and I've seen it in a few emails. But regardless, they are proven to be good neighbors, quiet neighbors, clean neighbors that hold their value. And I'll get into some of that a little bit more here. So the lifestyle that a lot of people choose when they move into a Next Metro, a Avila development, and it is a choice for most people. Most residents could easily afford to purchase a home. A lot of them have actually moved from homes that they owned, and they've decided to enter the rental market, exit the ownership market for various reasons. About half of them are over 45 years old, so there is a fairly significant empty nester contingent. A little under half are typically single. Like I said, about half of them moved from a traditional single-family home and made the conscious choice to move into one of these developments. About a fifth of the households have children, and the number of children per household is actually lower than the average in Oro Valley. Leases range from 12 to 24 months, but are typically about 28 months. So people tend to stay in them about 2 years, and that's pretty normal. I think everybody in the room has probably rented a house at one point or another. Sometimes it's a temporary gap between homes, or it's a new job, or it's a move, something like that. So this is the average that people stay. They have a strict contract, crime-free and drug-free contracts with their residents, and that extends to all guests. So a violation by a guest is against the resident, and they strictly enforce that. They also do background checks on all residents, and they do not allow felons to live in the developments. So this is the site plan that Ms. Oden had up on the screen. As she mentioned, there are three unit types. There are one-bedroom units, two-bedroom units, and three-bedroom units. The one-bedroom units are coupled together as attached, but then the two- and three-bedroom units are detached from each other. And this is all available. All these things are available online as well on the town's project webpage. Access, as Ms. Oden mentioned, is a little different than it was the first time. We have done a lot of brainstorming with town staff about how to make both of these parts of the Avila project work together and solve some larger traffic issues that exist today, regardless of what happens on these sites. So the consensus was that a realignment of Woodburn to basically bring it down to here, and then a new collector road connecting Rancho Vistosa Boulevard to Tangerine right there. The east end of Woodburn will continue to access Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, and it will then curve back down into there. I've got another slide that'll show a little more detail about those tighter bits up there along Vistosa Boulevard. Another big change that's happened since the last site plan that we presented was that a strip of ADOT right-of-way has been obtained, and you'll notice that it's along the southern edge here. Let me clean this up. So I'll outline it here. It's basically that land right there. So the Arizona Department of Transportation for years and years owned Tangerine Road, and in fact, a lot of the right-of-way that they have was given to them by the original developers of Rancho Vistoso back in the 80s. the intersections of Rancho Vistosa Boulevard and Tangerine, and also Innovation Park Drive and Tangerine. If you look at them, it's interesting because the right-of-way, the area that is reserved for the public road, actually flares out significantly. So kind of goes like that, and then like that, and then it comes back down on the other side of First. And the reason for that is that it was envisioned and planned, and the original agreements with ADOT actually spoke about a grade-separated interchange at each of those intersections. And that was based on two notions, neither of which really came to pass. One of them was that Tangerine Road would be State Highway 989 connecting Oracle Road with I-10. It will continue to be a big road. The Pima County Transit Authority has spent lots of money, as has Marana and Oro Valley, but it is not an ADOT road. It's no longer a state-level road. The other thing that didn't happen was Rancho Vistoso and all of the surrounding areas, including areas west of Rancho Vistoso, basically a lot of things along the Tangerine Corridor, didn't develop at the densities that were planned in the County General Plan, in Oro Valley General Plan, in the Rancho Vistoso planned area development. So what that means is that there's a lot less traffic that is on Tangerine and ever will be on Tangerine, most likely. So these really wide rights of way are not needed. They're not going to be interchanges. So ADOT decided, after giving Tangerine Road itself to Oro Valley not long ago, that they'd keep the strips of extra right-of-way along either side and try to monetize those and sell them to the adjacent property owners, which turned out to be a good choice because they auctioned, I think, all of them off and made a little bit of money. Point is, property owner has acquired that, which basically secures additional buffer area along Tangerine Road between what we're proposing and the actual road. The Washes, which are the wildlife corridors, have been preserved. You can see this one coming down through Reflections. Wiggles around like that. That's actually how it works. And then it goes into a culvert that goes underneath the road and continues down there. There's also another wash that comes along down here and heads that way. So both of those areas were identified in the original Rancho Vistoso PAD as open space, as were these areas up here in these subdivisions. So they've been preserved just like they were up there. The site plan itself, as Ms. Oden mentioned, the units cover the developable portions of the site. The parking, it has been internalized. We've got two gated entries there where they're shown, one off of Woodburn, one off of the new Tangerine Connector Road, whatever that will end up being called. There's uncovered parking, covered parking. There are some garage spaces as well, and those are just available to residents for adjustments to their rent. You can pay a little more for a covered parking space. You can pay a little bit more for a garage space, and those are all quickly leased up very quickly because there's a high demand for those things and people are willing to pay for them. Trash receptacles are also internalized. None of them are along the project perimeter. And Next Metro has also instituted a valet trash service, which means that residents put a little garbage can outside their front door, and then a service comes through, gathers them all, dumps them, and then returns them back to the residences. So you don't have everybody running over to the dumpster to deal with their garbage. It just kind of helps to keep it cleaner, and it's also an amenity that a lot of residents really enjoy. There is a central recreation area right here. And there's also going to be a multi-use path along Tangerine, a lot of lines on here, but along here. And then eventually when these commercial parcels on the corner develop, I imagine that path will get continued and connect up to Rancho Vistosa Boulevard. I guess the last thing I'll mention just from a site planning standpoint is that we've got perimeter buffer yards all the way around, according to the code that Ms. Oden had up there a minute ago. But it's also, as I mentioned, got a wider one along the south, just because that land down there is is less developable and makes a good buffer for these residents against the noise of Tangerine Road. So this is an example of the project architecture. As I mentioned, the mix of one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three bedrooms. They're about 60% of them are two and three bedrooms detached. This building here is an example of the attached version with the two one-bedroom units attached to each other. So you can see here, and I'll show you on the next slide here, here's another one. Very similar to surrounding architectural styles. Of course, these will also have to meet the towns and the Rancho Vistoso architectural design guidelines, just like everything else around here, the residential as well as the commercial. They're all subject to those. So there's a variety of architectural treatments, styles, colors, materials to try and increase the visual interest within the development itself. Here's an example interior. Again, the idea here is to make these very bright and open. They've got high ceilings. They've got quality finishes here, stainless steel appliances. They've got granite. Just trying to make these things feel open. I mean, they're not huge, but they need to feel bigger than they are, and that's one of the reasons why Next Metro has found these to be so successful and so many residents are wanting to pay premium rents to live in these developments. This is one of the reasons. Another example of a bright and open area, again, high ceilings, light colors, good finishes. And that actually, I'll take this opportunity to talk about rents for a minute. So in Rancho Vistoso, your typical single family homes that are rented, and there are a number of them, will typically go for about $1 to $1.15 per square foot per month. So in other words, a 2,000 square foot house would typically rent for $2,000 to $2,300 a month. In a villa, the rents typically range from about $1.75 to $2.30 a square foot per month, which equates to rents, given the unit sizes, of about $1,600 to $2,200 a month for the one to three bedroom options. And so the point here is that residents are willing to pay a significant premium in terms of how much they're paying for the space in exchange for the amenities and the security and the maintenance-free lifestyle that they enjoy. This is the recreation amenity concept that we've been working on for this particular side of Vila West. You can see this is the central amenity area that I circled on the map earlier. It'll include a pool, a spa, ramada, outdoor kitchen, and I've got some pictures of these later on. Lots of seating, a fire pit, some turf area, place for small ceremonies and gatherings. It's meant to be a very highly amenitized but very comfortable and cozy area. Just for reference, this is the one on Avila East. You can see a lot of the same elements incorporated into this design. And this is an example from another Avila development of one of those outdoor kitchens. And you can see here, you've got the stainless steel grills. You've got plenty of seating. You've got ceiling fans. It's this sort of architectural treatment and these sort of amenities that keep people wanting to move in and live, and again, pay premium rents for this environment. Here's another example of one of their pool areas in another development. And I think this map is actually a duplicate from one in staff's presentation, just shows the whole thing. So, concerns we've heard. There are a number of them, of course. Access and traffic is near the top. It's not at the top, but it's near the top. I've mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again, that the Rancho Vistoso PAD was envisioned and entitled and approved for about 14,000 homes. It'll end up being developed out at about 9,500, so about 4,500 homes fewer than what were planned. And what that translates into from an infrastructure standpoint is that the major trunk infrastructure like Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, like sewer lines and water lines, they were all developed to accommodate a lot more traffic than what will ultimately be on there. And part of that reason, if you remember that PAD map that Ms. Oden had up there, north of this parcel in Safeway, if you track up along Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, it was yellow on both sides most of the way up. And yellow on that map indicated high density residential of around 18 homes per acre. So those parcels were all envisioned for apartments, basically, back when this was approved. And that's how the planned density would have actually been realized, and the infrastructure would have been utilized according to its design. From a traffic standpoint, just comparing it to the existing zoning, again, we are zoned C1 commercial in the Rancho Vistoso PAD. The PAD actually has two commercial zones, one is C2, and that's what the marketplace is over there where the Walmart and the theater are. That's a heavier duty commercial zone. That's not what this is. This is more neighborhood commercial. What was envisioned here were things like the Safeway Shopping Center. That's pretty much a perfect example of the sort of development that was envisioned in the C1 commercial zone within the PAD. Commercial, though, generates a lot more traffic. So in the traffic report, we've found that this project, Avila West, is expected to generate about 832 trips per day, and that's coming and going, so they count both ways when they do that, versus C1 on the same parcel is a little over 3,000. So it's significantly less traffic than commercial would have generated. And that's simply applying the same intensity of development, commercial development, to this parcel as Safeway has. The Safeway Shopping Center has, I think, about a 30% building coverage of that site. So you apply the same thing and you multiply the numbers out. And this is what the traffic engineers have told us. So it's about a 70% reduction over what would happen from a traffic standpoint if these were to develop commercially. Now, people have said, well, that's sort of an empty statement, because the other half of our argument is that there's no demand for commercial, and that's absolutely right. But the point here is just that comparing apples to apples versus what was originally planned, this will generate significantly less traffic. I'll just skip to 7I because 5U is a different one. But the originally planned signal location, I'll back up here. So on that old 1987 map that Ms. Oden had up there, if you look really carefully, there's a number of circles on Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and some of the other larger roads in Vistoso. One of them was right here. And that indicated a potential planned, likely traffic signal location. For whatever reason, when the Horizons development here was built, it actually extended halfway down into what would have been the extension of that road. So that made it impossible to put a four-way signal at that location. I've talked to town staff, I've talked to the engineer who did that, and the original developer of Rancho Vistoso, and nobody seems to know why that happened, but it did. And so what it means is that while a signal is certainly needed somewhere in this area because of the volume of traffic on Vistoso Boulevard, the volume of traffic on Woodburn, the turning movements that occur between those two, and the traffic coming in and out of the Safeway Shopping Center, certainly a signal in that area is needed and warranted. And those analyses have been done and shown that's true. So knowing that the signal doesn't go here, we started looking, like I said, with town staff at how else to configure this. And so there's going to be a signal down at this intersection instead. And that is the northern entry to the Safeway Shopping Center, which I know is not the best access point right now. It's off at a funny angle. It kind of drives between, or drives today, it drives behind a couple of buildings. There's an area there that's got really lousy visibility as you're heading north before you want to make a left. We understand that. That was actually made worse by the fact that a lot of those retailers use it as a loading zone, and that's not what it was planned to be. The loading zone for that building, by the way, is actually over there. But that's not an enforceable thing because it's a private development. So what we've done is basically been tasked with, well, as part of this whole realignment here, knowing that these two parcels here, Avila East and West, are all part of one big picture, how do we also deal with the existing issues there? And we're working with town staff on that. We've got some ideas how to possibly add some pavement width there, stripe some lanes in that will make that whole area safer, flow better, and align with the proposed signal. So we're still working out those details. The engineers will figure it out. But there is a solution, I know, that will vastly improve that and, like I said, jive with that signal. Last thing I'll mention just in terms of circulation is pedestrian circulation. And obviously over on the east side here, it's right next to the shopping center. There's actually an easement covering both properties that says that there's cross access that was planned because it was planned as commercial. We're honoring those access points. We're still working those out, but we will be delivering a pedestrian access point right here so that people can cross one lane of traffic and then access by foot that whole row of stores there. From this side here, we will have sidewalks that get built along this new collector road, this new connector road, and then at the traffic signal, there will be opportunities for pedestrians to navigate across that safely into the Safeway Shopping Center, which has sidewalks and crosswalks in there. So both developments will have good pedestrian access over to that shopping. This is just a closer in area. So this is the area I was talking about. The signal will go here, and then here's the point where the visibility is really lousy. So we're working on solutions here that will address that issue and make that whole area a little bit safer. One of the other things I'll point out is that where Woodburn currently connects up to Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, that median will be closed. So it'll be a right in and then right out opportunity there, which is necessary because that's where a lot of people make U-turns now, which is not a safe movement. And then a northbound left is also troublesome given the speed. So this here will provide a safer overall circulation in that vicinity. Another thing we heard was concern about traffic signal spacing, and it certainly is tight. We've got a little over 800 feet from Tangerine Road up to where this signal is proposed, right there. That is close. It's not unheard of. For example, there's one over here down by the Tucson Mall that's by Wetmore and Stone. That one's a little less. It's about 810 feet. And then at First and Oracle, this signal is actually only about 600 feet away. So the interesting thing, too, is that usually when there are close signals like this, it's because of a constraint that they're having to work with. In both of these examples, there's a big wash that's crunching it together, but still warranting a signal to make the traffic flow safely. In this case, we've got the situation with Horizons that makes it impossible to put the signal up a little further north. So at any rate, it is close, but again, not unprecedented, and it'll certainly have to be designed and demonstrated to be safe. Another concern we heard had to do with property values and safety and crime. That's all sort of one idea. So I think somebody said in an email, there's no guarantee the project won't be owned by somebody else someday, and they wouldn't maintain it well. So owners of this sort of community, just like homeowners, like all of us, have a vested interest in maintaining and increasing the value of that asset. So a company that, if this were to be sold at some point, that company would come in, pay a lot of money, and they would have a significant valued asset that they would have a very large incentive to maintain. And I'll get into a little bit more about that later, but that's just a fact that if an investment company comes in and purchases something like this, they certainly don't want to see the property value drop. And maintaining it, keeping your rates high, keeping your amenities, your quality, your resident satisfaction high is the best way to keep your rents high, keep your vacancy rate low, and bolster, increase, and sustain the value of that asset. I've got some slides later on, but the 2020 residential, multifamily residential study that Oro Valley had done refutes this in several ways. I mentioned before, formal background check of all residents. No felons are allowed, which I should point out is not a requirement in single family residences. Nearby neighborhoods, my neighborhood, there's no such requirement to not have felons. They also have a zero tolerance on drugs, even for guests. So they want to keep these tight, clean, and safe. And that's one of the reasons why they have a strong contingent of female residents, especially young professional female residents, singles, who choose to live in these developments because it is safe. It's proven to be safe. It's these sorts of things that create that atmosphere. We've heard questions or concerns about the impacts to drainage on surrounding properties. The simple answer to that is that no development in Oro Valley is allowed to negatively impact any other property, upstream or downstream. That was the rule that was in place when the surrounding subdivisions got built, and that's the rule that's in place today. So wherever the stormwater is going today onto the property in terms of its volume, its velocity, and location, that's where it has to be accepted. And then once development is all done and basin area is provided to hold back that water and then meter it back out, it has to be demonstrated to leave the property in exactly the same place and velocity and volume as before. So that's a code requirement, again, on all developments. And just more specifically for these projects on 7i, for example, there's that wash that comes down, goes underneath. There's two of them, one on either side, goes underneath Woodburn. Both of those come onto the property. Those flows will continue to be allowed to flow to where they go today, down to Tangerine Road. There's also a little bit of drainage that I think comes out of the Reflections neighborhood that we'll have to pick up because that was part of the plan. And then what gets released out of both of these, again, can't have any negative impact on downstream. It's interesting, too, I mentioned before that Avila East is part of, it was planned as part of the Safeway Shopping Center. It was sort of envisioned as a phase two area of that, an expansion of that commercial. And so there was access stub outs, there was utility stub outs. If you drive out there today, you see the roads just kind of go up into nowhere. So there's also storm drain stub outs that go up into Avila East. So Avila East's water is intended to drain through the storm drains under Safeway, and that's how it was always planned. So again, no offsite impacts allowed. We've heard about open space. So Rancho Vistoso, it's a big area. It's about 8,000 acres, many square miles. About half of it was preserved on day one as open space. Wildlife corridors, basically what they did was they took a look at where the major floodplains are, where the major vegetation is, and of course there's a strong correlation between those two. And then up in the northern portions of Rancho Vistoso, I got an echo here. Yeah. Well, at any rate.
All right, we're good.
Okay. Thank you,
Hannah.
So as I said, about half of that 8,000-acre planned area development was initially preserved as open space, and then there's additional open space in each one of the development parcels as they move forward. Both of these parcels, Avila East and Avila West, were designated for development. They were designated for commercial development, just like Horizons and Reflections and Safeway. But again, the washes were held back, and that's what we'll be honoring as well. Ms. Oden mentioned the difference in open space required, three times as much on site. We've also heard about concerns over noises, lights, and view impacts to nearby residents. Now, for Avila East, where we actually share a boundary with the Horizons neighborhood, that's a much harder boundary here. On Avila West, we've got Woodburn, which does provide some separation. but I mentioned inside the contract, the resident contract, they have a strict no disturbance of the peace, and that's not just for neighbors of the project, that's for residents within the project. So that's part of the environment they create, is a peaceful, not noisy, comfortable place to live. Development is not a comfortable development to live in. And so the residents' demand, you know, as part of that unsaid exchange where they agree to pay a higher premium rent in exchange for amenities, that's one of them, is to not live in a raucous place. And of course, Oro Valley has their noise ordinance as well that covers everything, the surrounding neighborhoods as well. The pool area on the east side is about 280 feet from the nearest neighbor, and on the west side it's about 300 feet and across Woodburn. And just as a point of reference, at the Center Point development, the pool area, which is much bigger, is only about 130 feet from the nearest resident. From a grading standpoint, that ties into the concern about views. On the east side, typically there'll be about 5 to 9 foot of grade difference between the people in Horizons and those first homes in Avila. And coupling that with the single story restriction, the impact to views is basically none. On 7I, we're still working on our grades, but it will be lower. And it's also not adjacent like it is on the east side. We've got Woodburn in between, which is an 80-foot right-of-way, plus landscape buffer yards, plus building setbacks on either side, so well over 100 feet. And the terrain naturally falls from north to south, so even at grade, it would be lower without any sort of adjustments there. Again, the 18-foot one-story max, we've mentioned that. And, of course, it has to be compliant with the Oro Valley Outdoor Lighting Code, which severely limits light trespass onto surrounding properties. The top one here is just, it's more to show the distances that we're talking about. So this is the north edge of Avila West, and here's Woodburn right here. So you've got about 130 feet typically from residence to residence. And again, you got the one story over there, and I think it will be a little bit lower at the end of the day too. On the south side here, you've got Tangerine Road down here. The nearest residences there will be almost 200 feet away, and it falls off. And so here, this is the old property boundary that was shown on the first submittal. And then this is the additional area that was acquired from ADOT. So there's still a large right-of-way reserved for Tangerine. There's a lot of native landscaping along either side that won't be developed for the foreseeable future. We've also heard concerns about renters. So about a fifth of the housing units in Oro Valley are renter occupied. So if everyone likes living in Oro Valley, I would go so far as to say that renters are not a problem if a fifth of the homes here are occupied by them. And I think, as I said, everybody here has rented at some point or another. The median income in Oro Valley for renter households is a little over 50 grand. In Avila, it's higher. Over half of them are between 50 and 100, and about a quarter of them are actually between 100 and 200. So this gets back to what I was saying about how this is a choice for nearly every resident in Avila. They choose to live here. They could afford to buy, but they don't. I mentioned they are often previous homeowners who are downsizing. They're empty nesters. They're trying to get out of this volatile real estate market. Maybe pull some of the equity out of a house they've owned for a while, set it on the sides, and then wait for things to calm down and re-enter the ownership market. I don't know. But those are some of the things that residents tell Next Metro as to the reasons why they're looking. There's also people who prefer the rental format just because they don't want to own a house for this reason or that, but they don't want to live in that typical multi-story garden setting that I mentioned before with the larger apartment buildings. We've also heard from some of Oro Valley's largest employers, Oro Valley Hospital, U of A Vet Center, and others, who've said that they have trouble attracting employees, young, early career employees who want to live near where they work. And the options in Oro Valley are extremely limited. The general plan talks about providing a full spectrum of housing options. And if you look at what Oro Valley actually has, it's woefully deficient on this end here. And that's really a hard thing for some of the employers to deal with when they're recruiting. And that's verified. This is a tangent, but I'll mention it. So if you look at Oro Valley's daytime versus nighttime population, it's about 8,000 more people during the day. And if you consider that there are thousands of Oro Valley residents who leave town to work, that means that there's that many plus 8,000 who actually commute into Oro Valley to work. That's how that math works, which just underscores the deficiency in housing options in Oro Valley. Community investment is another thing we've heard concerns about. And as I mentioned, this will be a significant investment. So when a homeowner like you or me comes into a town, buying a house is a significant investment. When I bought a house in Oro Valley, it was a significant investment for me. It's no different for a developer. This will be an investment in the tens of millions of dollars they want to put into this community because they know this is a nice community that will support a quality product that will hold its value over time. Oro Valley's building code also does contain some property maintenance regulations, which a lot of people don't know about, but they are often enforced and they are applicable to all types of development. So somebody who's single family resident or a multifamily resident, anybody can call to the town and say, there's an issue with property maintenance and it needs to be dealt with. And there is code in place that allows Oro Valley to act on that. Also, I mentioned before Oro Valley's multifamily study that was done a couple of years ago. It showed that older apartments do maintain a higher classification and rents due to diligent maintenance in Oro Valley. So it has not been the experience in Oro Valley, in other words, for multifamily properties to become run down. That's just not the case. Impacts to existing businesses actually came up as a concern. I honestly struggle with how that's a concern because businesses feed on more nearby residents. That's one of the reasons why so many businesses in Oro Valley aren't doing as well as they could, certainly aren't doing as well as they would have if Rancho Vistoso had developed at its planned density. But there's less vehicular traffic than there would be if it were commercial, less retail competition, more customers, and it's walkable from these areas. So I would think that existing businesses would really enjoy that. And actually, to that point, as many of you know, there was a similar request for a rezoning on the southeast corner of this intersection a couple of years ago. And there were, I don't know, there were a couple dozen probably businesses who wrote in or called in imploring council to support that because they needed more customers. They were struggling. Now, that was in the middle of COVID, so it was an even darker time. But the recovery has not come, and they still struggle in Oro Valley. There is there's vacant store space that's been vacant since it was built years ago on the southwest corner of this intersection. We've also heard concerns about commercial viability. In other words, this land was planned for commercial. We should leave it that way so that it will generate commercial sales tax. That is just wishful thinking. I mentioned the lack of density in the PAD. That's not just in the PAD. That's throughout Oro Valley. That's one of the things that makes Oro Valley what it is the generally lower density character that sprawls out from the arterial roads. But that's also the reason why these commercial lands aren't built. There's a lot of excess commercial zoned land in Oro Valley that will not get built. Just for an example, the general plan of Oro Valley shows about 3.4% of the whole town planning area as commercial. The PAD in Rancho Vistoso shows about 5.1%. So the PAD was even heavy compared to what the town has since planned for. We commissioned an economic study just to get an assessment of the viability of the existing zoning versus what we're proposing. And I know people find it a little bit dubious when developers hire a consultant to perform a study and then miraculously the study supports their argument. I understand that, but facts are facts. And these guys, Valbridge is a accredited firm. They have done plenty of economic analysis for the public and the private sector. I think that their findings are very defensible. The study is on the website. I encourage you to read it. It is it's very eye-opening in terms of what Oro Valley can honestly expect from its vacant commercial land. And I'll just read these two statements here because they sum it up here. It's clear that the office and retail uses permitted by the current zoning are not aligned with market demand. No reason to believe this will change in the foreseeable future. They cannot be considered viable for either site. And quite simply, if zoning can't be amended, the subject properties will likely continue to remain vacant and unproductive for many years to come. In fact, their zoned commercial does not guarantee demand for such. And this has been directly demonstrated over the past 37 years. 37 years of them being zoned for commercial. And I should add, too, the proposal for this sort of development on the southeast corner of this intersection, a number of years ago, one of the reasons given at that final council hearing for not supporting it with 5 votes, it was supported 4-3. So there was a majority, but we needed 5 for other reasons. The reason given was because the Oro Valley Code had been recently amended to allow research and development uses in commercial property, and that code amendment hadn't had sufficient time to percolate out and see if that use was viable. On these parcels, though, that argument doesn't work because they've actually had research and development as a permitted use for 37 years. So those kinds of uses are going to Innovation Park. That's where those uses want to be. And frankly, that's where I think they belong. Oro Valley Marketplace is a great example of the commercial struggle in Oro Valley. I'm sure many of you are aware of the proposed redevelopment of that shopping center with Walmart. Used to have Dick's and a bunch of other anchors that have simply gone away. COVID killed some of them, but the shopping center struggled from day one. And now they're trying to repurpose some of those areas to provide more residents, which will support those commercial uses. So that's a direct, real-time, present-day example, more evidence that the commercial entitlements in Oro Valley are overbooked.
Excuse me, sir. Can we wait for questions until the end? Yeah, so we'll extend past 7:30 at this point. Yep.
Some key findings of the 2020 multifamily study, and these are important, and this is near the end of my presentation, is that demand is high. Rent growth in Oro Valley's multifamily developments is the strongest in the region. It expects that Oro Valley will need 200 to 400 new housing units every year until 2050, or at least until then. That's as far out as the study went. But the problem is Oro Valley is close to being built out. And so there's not much land left for residential development. The takeaway is that with strong demand for a rental product and limited land, it makes sense to repurpose non-viable commercial land to use it for reasonable transitional density residential. I'm not saying that every piece of commercial land out there should be a three-story apartment complex. I don't think that would be appropriate. There is increasing demand from those demographic groups that I mentioned before. And this is interesting. Oro Valley has 12 multifamily developments. Average vacancy is about 5.4. That's considered full. That's normal turnover. So there's certainly plenty of capacity in Oro Valley, plenty of demand for more. 8 of those 12 are more than 20 years old. They also have low vacancy and exhibit strong and rising rents, indicating that age of these sorts of developments does not equate to decline. And that gets back to what I was talking about earlier about the company who owns assets like these being highly incentivized to make sure that those values don't drop. A couple of examples here. The oldest one, actually, there's a 36-year-old multifamily development in Oro Valley. The rents there average about $1,200, a little over that, and that's actually higher than the average in Oro Valley. So there's a 40-year-old one up in the foothills with even stronger rents. And the point there is that desirable locations, when well-maintained, hold their value, and desirable locations tend to hold their value, so they are well-maintained. And Oro Valley is a desirable location, has been for a long time, and I expect it will be for a long time. Mentioned before, fewer children, so there's lower impact on schools. And also, this was an interesting finding from the multifamily study, that multifamily units make up about 15% of the total housing stock in Oro Valley, but only 13% of serious crimes. So per unit, single-family homes actually have a higher crime rate than multifamily. So, takeaway, what are the main community benefits? We're fixing a significant public roadway circulation and safety issue that can only happen when you get both of these parcels together, and the investment between those two allows it to absorb the huge expense of realigning Woodburn and installing a traffic signal. We're meeting the growing need, which is currently in a deficit, for this sort of housing. We are also, as I mentioned, solidifying an appropriate transitional land use. When Rancho Vistosa was planned, the commercial, the red and the yellow, the commercial and high density went right up against each other. That's good land use planning because those are compatible uses. Anybody from the American Planning Association will tell you that that's good planning, but the high density has developed at medium density, so it's not good planning to put commercial against medium density. So in both of these cases, we've got an opportunity to put a transitional density, something that's residential and compatible with the nearby residential because it's not super high density, but also something that's high enough density and is of a land use type that fits well with the commercial. So we can solidify that now and make use of that land. We're also going to increase the viability and success of local commercial tenants. And that's all I have to say. I went a little longer than I expected, and I apologize.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Olin. I just answered that question for you, but I assume it's okay with the group if we go to 8 o'clock instead of 7:30, right? Nobody has any objections. Of course, you can leave before that if you do. All right, so now that we've had the presentations, we're going to open it up to you folks. As I said, we do have about 40 people online now, so a pretty good crowd on there as well. So we're going to be alternating back and forth so everybody has an opportunity to speak. This goes for the applicant and town staff. If you hear us speak in jargon or use an acronym that you're not familiar with, please don't hesitate to raise your hand, and we'll try and find another way to rephrase that. Our esteemed constituent services coordinator, Ms. Jessica Hind, is going to be walking around with a microphone in here so folks on Zoom can hear. That's the only way they're able to hear. For those folks on Zoom, I just want to provide a couple of quick instructions if you're not familiar with it. You will need to raise your hand if you have a question with the icon circled in yellow here. So that may be at the top or bottom of your screen, depending on the device that you're using. If you're participating via phone, excuse me. If you're participating via phone, you'll need to hit *9 to be able to raise your hand, and they will be shown on our screen here, so we will jump over to those as well. If you are having any Zoom issues, please contact Melini Sims at 229-4836, and she can certainly help out. You'll also note that Ms. Oden is going to be keeping notes over here of all of the questions and comments that we hear. We do that for several reasons. We turn that into a neighborhood meeting summary that we put on that OV Projects page I mentioned. That also helps formulate staff's recommendation to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then those neighborhood meeting summaries get forwarded to both the commission and council to help inform their decisions as well. So with that, I do see a hand here. So Ms. Hind, if we could go here, and then I'll come to you, sir. And I do see several hands online, so we will jump over there as well.
Do you want me to hold that? Okay. My name is Frank Mayfield. For everybody that's viewing and everybody here in this room on this handout called Proposed Rezoning to High Density Residential, I'd like to point out future meeting dates, number 4 and 5, a Planning and Zoning Commission public hearing November 1st. That's open to all of us. Town Council public hearing, the final hearing on this, December 7th. I encourage all of us, if we have concerns, to make sure that we attend those meetings. This has been identified as a primary intersection. There's been statements made such as residential under development. There's been a lot of comments or positions made, you know, by the developer and their representatives. The town website says Oro Valley, it's in our nature, and it references the small town feel that residents desire. The problem that they've, or the resolution that they've postulated to solve the traffic problem, which is what I see as a huge issue, is to realign Woodburn, put in an intersection with a stoplight, and then prevent a left turn onto Woodburn westbound if you're going northbound. That would require everybody who accesses their properties off of Woodburn to travel through that neighborhood. Not a good solution. There are 6 neighborhoods that are served off of Woodburn. There's 13 residential streets also off of Woodburn. There's painted Sky Elementary, Golder Ranch Fire Department, what I believe is a Latter-day Saints Church. There's a community park, the Wildlife Ridge Park. If you look at the population, current population or the population that shows in the 2020 census for Rancho Vistoso. Not all of Ural Valley, but just Rancho Vistoso. We're no longer a small town. And you're taking these neighborhoods and you're going to rot them by preventing the left-hand turn off of Rancho Vistoso onto Woodburn. You're going to rot them all the way through there. Fire trucks, garbage trucks, trash, mail, delivery, you name it, landscaping. It's already what I would call a cluster, a problem traffic-wise there. My water pressure is already, in this last year, dropped significantly. So there's many issues here that I don't believe have been addressed adequately. Under a slide that they presented regarding drainage impacts, it said no off-site impacts. I believe that should also apply not only with water, but with traffic and other issues as well. Thank you.
Sure. And I should mention, if you've got more than one question, that's great. But out of fairness to the group, if you could just try and limit it to one or try and be as succinct as possible. So, gentlemen, here in the blue, Paul, did you have anything you wanted to touch on there?
I do.
Sorry, 1 second.
Yeah,
I'm going to ask the
20
applicant.
Seconds.
So okay, yeah.
Just real quick to clarify, Frank. So right now people can come up Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and turn left. So the difference...
I can barely hear you.
Sorry. Right now, when people come up Rancho Vistoso Boulevard, they make a left to get onto Woodburn. After we're done, they'll come up here, make a left here, and come right there. Oh, I'm sorry. So it's actually a very small difference, and the safety improvement more than offsets it.
Mr. Kiesler, did you have anything you wanted to add? Yeah, there's a microphone right here. Mr. Kiesler, the town engineer, is also going to provide comment on that.
All hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't I, there's a slide in the end, if we could get to it.
Which one is it?
I believe Hannah has a slide to show the overall area. What I really want to do is very quickly just run you through the reasoning and what's going on with the traffic and why the realignment. And again, try to break it down in the simplest pieces. So today, right now, all of this does not exist. There's two main problems out there, one far worse than the other. I'm going to start small and work up. The first problem is that this median right here, this kind of serpentine median, it doesn't provide enough storage for all the traffic that goes down Woodburn. And I know all of you experience that, particularly when school's in session. It backs up into the number one lane. That's the inside lane on Rancho Vistoso heading north. That's a problem. That is a risk of rear-ending. And rear-ending is not uncommon with school buses. Oral Valley had one several years ago on Lambert. So that's a concern. Been very fortunate, have to knock on some wood, that there hasn't been some type of a major incident because of that. Can we clear this, please?
Oh, it's up at the top.
Yeah, there's a little button.
Ah, there we go.
Yep.
Oh, got it. Cool. So the worst of the problem really is the north entrance on Safeway, which is right here, the left turn coming out of Safeway, and the T-bone. There was one last Wednesday in the middle of the day. It wasn't storm. There wasn't sight visibility issues. It's impatient drivers darting out into traffic because there is a fair amount of traffic on Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. This is the major thing that today, without the development, needs to be addressed and fixed. Now, the town did something to address and fix that. We created, down here, the ability for folks, anybody who wants to head west, head east, head south, you can leave through the south end of the shopping center get over to the light and go to all parts you want to under the protection of a signalized intersection. It makes perfect sense to me. I fought for years to get that to happen. Ultimately, the town had to take over Tangerine from ADOT in order to effectuate that. And we did spend quite a bit of money to create that. Well, as I mentioned, last Wednesday, there was an accident. There was an accident about a month ago.
Once a week.
Yeah, there are accidents out there all the time. Now, what we could do is we could say no left turns. You can't take a left turn out of Safeway. What does that do? That pushes it to a U-turn right here at Woodburn. All right, let's just say no left turn, no U-turn at Woodburn. That pushes it down to Rincon Peak, where the site visibility is actually far worse. Okay, you say no U-turn there. Push it down to Aerosmith. But now we're talking a distance where we put a pork chop right here to try to prevent people from doing it. Are they going to drive all the way down to Aerosmith, or are they going to go? Are they going to do what they darn well please? Well, anyways, I'm talking about, you know, what's the issue here? The issue is that we have a problem. We don't have the real estate to solve this problem. So when the developer approached the town with the concept of these two properties, one of the things that would happen is that they're going to be introducing more traffic into the area. So what is already a bad situation becomes a worse situation. So we sat down with the developer and we said, when we sat down with the developer and said, well, look, one of the things you have to do is you have to fix this. So one answer to fix this would be, what if you put a traffic light on Woodburn? Well, if you put a traffic light on Woodburn, you would have to close off the entrance in the Safeway. So everyone from Rancho Vistosa that comes down and uses Safeway is forced to come down and do a U-turn out on Tangerine. That's not really good or feasible for the community. The other option is, well, put a signal right here. So now you have directly addressed these left turns. You're not going to get people darting out into traffic and getting T-boned with those left turns because now you have a controlled intersection. But if you create a signal here, you got a problem with Woodburn. And this is the chicken or the egg thing that we've been having for years and years, something I wanted to get solved, but we haven't had the real estate because it's all private land out here. We haven't had the ability to be able to fix it. The only way to truly fix this entire situation because of how close these two intersections are, you got to cut one off. The only way to cut one off is to actually combine them.
What?
To combine them. Combine it into one uniform intersection. So that's what this plan represents, is turning Woodburn into one uniform intersection with the Northern Safeway driveway. And one other point. The Safeway development here, I know this feels like a back alley right now, but this is one development. If this doesn't happen, commercial is entitled. This is actually a main entrance into Safeway, as much so as that entrance is, even more so because of the median break. And because that's how, again, folks from Rancho Vistoso access Safeway. And as you mentioned, there's a large population base that does use that that shopping center. We can't bury our heads in the sand. We can't walk away from it. What we need to do is to solve it. So what this... I'm not trying to endorse this particular development, but what I am endorsing is the traffic solution. It's something that will make things safer out there, and that's the key. Make a controlled intersection. Now, will people run a red light? I think you all see everybody runs red lights, all right? But it's better. It's better than an uncontrolled intersection. That's basically the genesis of what this whole traffic arrangement is all about.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Kiesler. Ms. Hine, please, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys. Before you go, sir, if you would stay for a moment, it's not entirely clear to me. When you say block off the current Woodburn? Is it going to be entirely closed and we'll all be forced to exit through the brown areas?
Not entirely. Not entirely. So we're not going to dig up this portion of Woodburn. It's still going to be there. So you can still, say you're heading south on Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, you can still get onto Woodburn here.
Okay.
If you live here and you want to get out to Rancho Vistosa Boulevard, you can come out and you can turn right here.
Okay.
So you'll still have access. The only thing that is cut off on Rancho Vistosa Boulevard is that left turn. Two left turns. The left turn to go north.
Okay.
But how that's solved is to go to the signal.
Thanks, sir.
Can you show them where they come if they're going northbound on Rancho?
Sure. So if you're coming northbound on Rancho Vistosa, and you say you live in here, all right, you're coming northbound, you go through the signal, and that's how you'll get to the, that's the trade-off to
wow.
increase the safety.
What if you're going that way?
Yeah, the 13 neighborhoods or six neighborhoods, 13 streets.
You still go that way.
Up through there? Yeah.
No, that's a lot of.
But the problem, so just this morning, mm-hmm. so I live in.
Great. All right.
They
can, yeah. I'll see if I can help with all this. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
More questions for
Sorry,
Paul.
I can't hear you online.
It was a requirement that there be no impact to drainage, and you're addressing that. Cars are drainage. It's really simple, Paul. Look at me, please. Cars are drainage, and that's how you need to think of it, and I think that's where the failure is. What you, sir, as an engineer are suggesting is needed now, irrespective of these multiple developments. So draw a circle, if you would. I asked you this when we met on the internet before. Draw a circle where the traffic light's supposed to be. And what you're saying then, and then draw a line where Woodburn is now. And what you're saying is that in the morning between 7 and 9, in the afternoon between 4 and 6, traffic will not back up between the green marked light and Woodburn. It won't go beyond that. Traffic will still be able to come out and turn right without any issues. No, that's what he's saying, because it has to be. And then you're also saying, sir, that Tangerine to the new traffic light will not back up with cars. And essentially, that would need to be something that you and your firm would guarantee with a bond or whatever. And then one last thing, sir, and I mentioned this when I was speaking before, I don't care what you put there. There's too many cars now, and I don't care what it was projected to be. I don't want to have a traffic jam like at Wetmore. That's silly, right? It would be silly to have that many cars going here in our neighborhood. What we need to be sure of, my friends, is that whatever comes onto this will not bring in 400 new cars or so or more. Yeah, it won't. We can't have that. And then as well, as a city, if we want to maintain the quality of traffic and life, not the frustrations of a big city, I still feel that this would be a great place to buy and turn it into a park. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rowland, was there anything in there you'd like to address?
You know, I guess I would just say that the town code does deal with stormwater drainage and traffic in two very different ways. Drainage is the one-to-one. You cannot have an impact. Traffic, it has to do with the capacity of the roads. And so you can put additional vehicles onto a road as long as it doesn't drop their level of service to an unacceptable level. That's not the way drainage is handled. And with these significant improvements, we'll actually be fixing the safety issue that we were just talking about.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rowland. Jessica?
You got it. I'm Rick Bolesh, and I live on New Dawn. And at your last meeting, you said that there would take away the entrance to Woodburn Avenue from your original plan, but here it looks like you've still maintained that entrance along the existing Woodburn Avenue to your development, as well as putting in this new ripple to add another extension of Woodburn Avenue. The other question I had that relates to that has to do with, you're talking about 125 new units on the west side, 200 units on the east side, and up the street in 2 weeks there's going to be another meeting like this about the Moore Loop area that's going to be rezoned for 90 new houses. The combination of all those with traffic consuming two people in each household or apartment, and two trips a day if they're working and they're not all retired, you're looking at a total of about 1,300 new trips in that intersection every day. Every single day. And it's already a tangle zone. There's at least an accident a week between Woodburn and Tangerine. At least. And sometimes more. The speed on Rancho Vistosa Boulevard is too high for what you're proposing. It should be like up in Sun City, where it's 35 miles an hour. And the speed on Woodburn should be 25 miles an hour because of the already existing issues. And if there's access from your development to Woodburn, the existing Woodburn, it'll be impossible for us to get off our street.
Okay, Mr. Olin, anything to add there, Mr. Olin?
I agree with most of what you just said.
Okay, Thaddeus, I do see some hands in the audience. I will get to you. We're going to go over to Zoom here real quick. We've got a number of hands on there as well. So could we please have George Michael unmuted? And please, folks on Zoom, make sure that you unmute yourself. Mr. Michael, go right ahead. Oh, nope, you're muted again. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
So I'm a doctor who lives in Rancho Vistoso, and I just want to comment and ask a question about the presentation. I felt like there was an omission in the presentation. For the past 2 years, I've been trying to buy commercial real estate in my own neighborhood to provide healthcare services. And the omission, the reason that there's no demand is because of the types of development that are proposed, which are trying to maximize profit and put in large, big boxes that are not e-commerce resistant. And the prices in that area are close to $35 a square foot just for the land alone. And the omission, which is the question, is, and I feel many people would relate to this, is, you know, me and my wife, we have to drive quite a bit out of Rancho Vistoso for a lot of things. Is, you said the percentage of commercial in Oro Valley and then what was planned, but no one ever said what is the actual percentage of commercial in Rancho Vistoso, because for the past 2 years I've looked and it's not there. And I've even talked to this developer about the northwest corner, which he's proposing a gas station and a couple other buildings of commercial. But I would ask the question, what is the percentage of accessible commercial to the people who actually live in Rancho Vistoso? Because I don't shop at the Safeway. I'd rather go to the Fry's. And I feel like I don't shop in my own neighborhood. And I would like to know, what is the accessible percentage of commercial in Rancho Vistoso, and why we can't find, you know, someone suggested a park. That sounds lovely. Why can't we have a proposal for commercial that actually fits the neighborhood, as opposed to, you know, a Walmart or a Best Buy or these other things?
Mr. Olin, did you have anything you'd like to answer there?
I heard a number of statements. I'm not sure what accessible commercial means, but I also heard the speaker say that he doesn't use the grocery store that's actually in his neighborhood. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure what that means, really, accessible commercial. But the percentages of commercial that I threw up before on the screen are entitled lands, not developed lands. So, and the point there was that there's an abundance of commercially entitled land that isn't developed as commercial due to a lack of demand. If there was demand, it would get built. That's the way those owners operate. If they could develop it under existing entitlements, which allow things like the Safeway, it would have been built a long time ago.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Olin. Thaddeus, if you could unmute Mr. Carr, Jared Carr.
Hi, this is Cindy Carr.
Oh, okay. Yep, go right ahead. We can hear you.
Thank you. I have several questions, but I'll stick to one. I, like everyone else, have a lot of concerns surrounding the traffic situation and the examples provided of the other intersections that have lights very close together, I think, are two of the worst intersections that I know of. So I'm wondering if you could speak to the fact that these two properties being discussed have been in separate projects of separate meetings. I've attended a lot of those meetings. The Via East and Via West are being presented here separately, but they have a lot of dependencies with regard to this, particularly this proposal for traffic management that you consider to be an improvement or fix to the safety. Most of the rest of us in the room think it's making things worse, but could you explain why they're being presented as separate projects, as separate meetings, when they rely on the same dependent traffic situation? And what happens if one of them gets approved and not the other with regard to the traffic situation?
Sure, and we can have Ms. Oden answer that question as soon as she's done writing it down.
All right, thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Yeah, I mean, essentially the reason why they're being presented under two applications is there are two separate property owners. So essentially, to keep them distinct due to the ownership, that's why they're being presented under two applications. While they are definitely, as you said, dependent on each other and very interrelated, there are different neighbor concerns from both the Horizons neighborhood and the Reflections neighborhood, so hence also the two separate neighborhood meeting processes. Hope that answered your question.
It didn't. You didn't answer the part that's most important, which is what happens if one project moves forward and gets approved to be rezoned, but the other does not?
Sure. That would
For
be
example,
a question.
Like, the Horizons of the neighborhood on East seems like a really, really bad idea to me for traffic. It's too much being squished in that little space. But what if that were to get turned down, but the other one approved, or vice versa?
Mr. Rowland?
I believe the answer to that is that this level of infrastructure cost, including the signal and a realignment of a collector road and installation of a new loop road, that cost can be absorbed by a larger project, i.e. both of them. I doubt that it could be absorbed by either one, meaning that this traffic fix, I think, is tied to both of them.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rowland? Jessica?
Hi, my name is Aldi Rose, Oro Valley resident. I have a question. On this map right in front of us, there's two red commercial areas. Who owns those commercial areas that are remaining commercial?
The same owner.
Okay, so he's going to have his cake and eat it too. He's going to have commercial and his high density. And at what, and this is for the county now, at what point in this requesting process is the decision made? Is that the next two meetings where the town council says, yes, we're going to allow high density, or no, we're not going to allow high density?
Sure, I can answer that question. Yes, so this application has to go to commission for recommendation to council. Ultimately, it will be town council deciding whether to approve or deny it.
And I would actually, you said the thing about cake. The opinion is, or the theory is here, that all of this commercial here is not viable, but if we can add a population density to part of it, maybe we can salvage two of them and provide those neighborhood level retailers. That's the idea.
Thank you.
Okay, quick question. The two intersections, are you going to have stop signs there? So now we take a left at the light, and then you have to hit a stop sign, a three-way stop sign, I'm assuming, and then you go to the other intersection, it's another three-way stop sign in order to get past to Woodburn. Does that make sense?
It does, yes. And I will have Mr. Kiesler see if he can talk over the rain outside.
One more. Who would pay for the stoplight or the light? Who's going to pay for that, the developer or us?
Developer.
Developer.
Let me I'll make one correction. So,
right.
So I'm the town engineer. So as far as stop signs go, I can actually show you right here. There'll be a stop here for this traffic movement, and there's going to be a stop here for this traffic movement. But what we want to do is we want this to be free-flowing. So there will not be a three-way stop there. There will not be a three-way stop at the other one. Going this way in Woodburn? Yeah, they will come to a stop sign right here.
The other way?
The other way? Well, there's no stop sign, but they can come out here if they want to. But they'll be coming on the back side of the light. It'd make more sense. Well, I guess, yeah, they'll hit a stop sign here. Here they won't hit a stop sign.
Right,
but so they will end up at the light one way or the other.
Okay.
But what was the other? Oh, the pain. So the town... We collect impact fees from development. So anybody who buys a house, you know that buys a new built house or you build a commercial building, you have to pay an impact fee that goes into an account. We have something called an infrastructure improvement plan. It's called the IIP. In that IIP, the town has designated $750,000 to go towards a fix for this traffic problem. Because this traffic problem exists without this development. So in fairness, we pull from all the other developers, we pull this money, so the town will bring $750,000 to the construction of this solution. That's a small percentage of what the overall cost is. And as Mr. Olin mentioned, you know, with respect to whether one development or the other can absorb it, I mean, that's on them. But the town will be bringing $750,000 forward for the solution, if it is indeed approved.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Kiesler. Thaddeus, if we could have Tristan on Zoom unmuted, please. Go right
ahead. Hello. Thank you. I want to first off say thank you for presenting the plan and also pointing out where you're being mindful to the residents around this property. I appreciate that, showing where it could be more people, it could be a Walmart, and you are taking action to make sure that doesn't happen. That being said, though, I am a homeowner whose property borders this development. So, you know, if I had my wishes, nothing would be there, or it'd be a sea of shops and restaurants that I like. It's naive for the town to think that this will not be developed. So this is either a question to the town or the council members or the developer. This land will eventually be developed. So this casita style one story will not block my view. I appreciate that. But when you say young professional, I get very anxious. I was also a female young professional. And being single, having a nice income, that meant a lot of partying, a lot of noise, bringing in friends. And that's kind of what I want to avoid. So have we thought of like maybe a compromise where we turn this into a 55 and older community?
Mr. Olin?
I don't believe that has been one of the users who has expressed any interest in this parcel. I think if there were demand from such a user, they would have come forth in the last 37 years.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Oland. Can we please have Rosa Daly unmuted? Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. I apologize if I didn't.
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can. Go right ahead.
I'm Rosa Daly. I am a Rancho Vistoso, Oro Valley resident. So this is my second meeting for West, and I also attended one for the East version. And I decided I just wanted to listen to what everyone had to say and, gather my opinion as I watched the presentations and heard everybody out. So first of all, this is a very important intersection to me and anyone living north of here. And I don't want to say that, we're more important than the poor people who live adjacent to this, because I feel for them. I really do, because I've been through this once already with Mr. Olin in my backyard. So I want to say that I realize there's a traffic problem and we need to solve that traffic problem. But the housing and the density that you want to shove into this intersection, to me, just does not make sense. It doesn't make sense to increase the problem while solving it. It just doesn't, which is probably why our town engineer constantly issues the disclaimer that he's not saying he's for the project to fix the traffic problem, but he knows the traffic problem needs to be fixed. So, I agree that commercial is challenging, but 37 years, you keep saying, Mr. Olin, yes. But what I say is we're barely 50 years old in Oret Valley. And, we may grow into some commercial uses there in the next 10, 15 years. So what if it stays empty for that time? The owner bought commercial and, there's timing for everything. So I don't see that this is the solution in this particular area because of that intersection. And the people who have to use it. Now, I heard a gentleman say he prefers fries. So do I. I guess I'm lazy. I end up in Safeway all the time. And I use a lot of other businesses in that shopping center. And I actually was in one of the businesses a month ago when the East meeting was going to take place. And they were asking me if I knew about it. And I told them what was going to happen if it gets approved by council. And they were livid. They didn't want the customers in their service-based industry not to be able to get a parking space or to deal with traffic or to deal. They thought it was a horrible idea. So you presume that all businesses want more rooftops, and that's not necessarily the case. That Safeway shopping center is very, it's very popular and it's done very well, and there's no vacancies in there. So, I think that you're just presuming a lot. And I do agree that maybe this product works someplace else, but I really do not think it's a great idea for this area. And I really don't have any questions. I just wanted to make these comments because, I feel for the people who are living adjacent to this. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mike.
Mr. Rowland, have something?
Rosa, I would just encourage you to read the economic study that's posted online. Like I said, there's a lot of interesting data, and it's conclusive, and it's done by people who are economists. I'm not an economist, and you're not an economist, but I would just encourage you to read it.
Okay. Ms. Hine?
Oh. Just to the traffic, could a roundabout be considered among the options? It might help with some flow or with people changing direction off on Woodburn or moving in. I know some people don't like those, but it might help and it might be a consideration.
Okay. Mr. Kiesler, did you have anything you'd like to add?
Just real quickly, yes, a roundabout could be put in there. In fact, one of the early designs had a roundabout.
That was a previous proposal.
Oh. There was a roundabout right here. So a roundabout can fit in there. Yeah, and it would make a good solution. You mean up here? Oh, you mean here? Oh, sorry. You mean there? No, because The issue is the closest of these two. Whatever you do to fix one impacts the other. That's why they have to be gathered together. If they're farther apart, then it could work. What's called is the functional limits of an intersection. So if there's traffic movements, you know, cars coming on, cars going off, trying to make a turn, in the middle of a urban area, you'll notice that that works when there's no median. So there is a center lane for people to sit in to be able to make that turn. That is not the configuration that we have here in a suburban setting. So in order to make that work, I've been banging my head on this one for several years. The answer is to combine them in one form or another. So with the availability of the private land coming into play, that's why this opportunity has arisen.
Okay. Thank you. Paul?
My name is Marcus LeBaron. I live on North Newdon, right to the west of the Wash there. I got six kids, and this morning there were 21 cars lined up as you go off Woodburn onto Rancho Vistoso, 21 cars. I sat there for 3 minutes waiting for traffic to go through. I agree. We have a traffic problem there. I don't see how adding 200 homes to this area is going to help that at all, even with what is proposed. I'm trying to imagine me coming back from work, going north on Rancho Vistoso, turning left on that new road, turning right, and then trying to cross traffic coming across from Woodburn to get to where I can go into my neighborhood. That even now, just pulling out the sight lines of traffic coming from Painted Sky, you got to step on the gas to get out of there. That just adds a whole nother complicated dynamics. And so I agree something's got to be done with traffic. I am 100% in disagreement with the high density housing there. I think my questions, I got a couple questions. They would be, how much has the town done in the past 37 years to attract businesses? Right now, we have to go down to Tucson for some of our specialty stuff. Why can't we do that here? And I don't expect you to answer it, but what sort of incentives are we doing there? My second question is, when this next, this company says that they have a contract with all their residents that nobody will be doing drugs, the question you have to ask is, well, why do they put that in there? Because when you have high density, we've been in apartments, those type of people are not committed to the area. They don't have the investment. Something like this is going to change our neighborhood. I love Oro Valley. I moved here in 2020 from Idaho, where in a place called Nampa that grew in 10 years from 50,000 to 100,000. It was like a house pooper came in and put houses everywhere. Infrastructure couldn't keep up. This feels like that. It feels like we're trying to shove more people into an area that just can't support it traffic-wise. And I'm highly concerned about it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rowland, was there anything you wanted to touch on there? No? Okay. We're going to go back to the folks on Zoom. So, Thaddeus, could I have Amansala Farid, please, unmuted? Hopefully I didn't butcher that. Apologize if I did. Please.
Yes.
Okay, yep, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay. My name is Farid Khaja. I am Manansala's husband. I'm a cardiologist who lives in Horizon Valley. And I've got some bullet points, and I want the answer from the persons who are answering in one sentence and not an hour and a half long debate. How much does the town expect to gain in taxes, number one? Number two, how much profit are the developers expecting from this project? I'm not interested in the inside of the condo. I want somebody to sleep with me in my house in Horizon and listen to the noise at nighttime from Tangerine and from Rancho Vistoso. And what is the proposed selling price? And last of all, there was too much talk, 1.5 hours, selling like timeshare condos. One sentence, please. Answer.
Mr. Rowland, I can
The tax, we don't have an answer on the tax. Taxes that the town will receive, of course, there will be construction sales tax, impact fees, things like that that come through as the if the project is approved, but I don't have a detailed number on that for you. Mr. Olin, was there anything else in there that you can provide an answer on?
There will be zero commercial sales tax if it stays its current zoning.
Okay, thank you. Thaddeus, could we please have Tristan unmuted?
Hi, thank you. I was wondering what the maximum occupancy is for the two-bedroom, the one-bedroom, and the three-bedroom.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Olin?
I believe it's two people per bedroom.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Olin. Jessica?
So I don't think you're going to have the answer to this. You'll have to get me some information, I believe so. I know that I haven't seen anything regarding how many accidents there have been at Tangerine, Rancho Vistoso intersection, the whole way back to the Woodburn, that entire area that we're talking about. And, you know, the exits, of course, from Safeway fall into there as well. But I would like to have that information, and preferably over, like, the last 5 years, because practically two of the years we were housebound with COVID. So we can't just go by that. And I know some of the I believe some of the traffic studies, I heard at another meeting that they also were going to do some sort of an adjustment because of that. So that's what I would like to see. But my question is this. So I believe it may have been in the site analysis. You talked about the student generation. And I'm wondering, it was in this site analysis that it talked about a total of maybe 70 students perhaps that were going to be potentially generated. And then you indicated that because of how the next metro developments are, it probably wouldn't be that many. But even if it's half of it, first of all, was that only for Rancho Vistoso West, or was it also a total including the east parcel? And then if it was half of the 67, we're looking still at having a bus that's stopping for 33, 35 students. And where are they going to stop? And are we going to expect kids to try to cross the road if you're including the east section in that?
So the first question, the calculations were for East and West separately, and Amphi School District confirmed that they do have capacity for both. They confirmed they have capacity for if every single student generated in both of those actually went to Amphi schools, which we all know isn't the case with all the charter schools and things like that. In terms of bus drop-offs, we haven't looked at that, but no, we wouldn't be looking for kids to cross busy streets. We'd be working with the school district to figure out, you know, where they would prefer, where they need bus stops, things like that. So that always comes later because it's a safety concern that can get addressed through engineering, but it'll have to be.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roland. And Thaddeus, we do have one Zoom participant who hasn't had a chance to ask a question. So could you unmute John Hutzler?
Hi, folks.
Hi, go right ahead.
My wife and I's first opportunity to join in one of these meetings because we travel a lot. We've lived in Tucson for 33 years. We used to live in the foothills of Tucson, and we moved to Rancho Vistoso a year ago. We love the small community. We love the dark. We love the everything about Rancho Vistoso. If we would have known of this project, we would not have moved here. We feel like we were sold a bait and switch situation. And unfortunately, we were unable to visit any of these meetings because of traveling that we've been doing. And quite frankly, this meeting hasn't been very helpful to us because usually we can see the gentleman standing on the stage and the lady, but when you go to show something, you're showing a map that we can't see very well on our phones. So we can't see the areas that you're speaking about, but we live in Rancho Vistoso, just off of Woodburn. And we would have never bought here if we would have known that this thing was going to go up right behind our house. And the noise we can hear on Tangerine alone, what is it going to be like when it's on Woodburn? We can hear the sirens from the fire department every night when they go off. So I can tell you we're going to be at the next meeting and we're going to seriously consider moving in the meantime.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Olin, was there anything you'd like to touch on there? No? Okay. Sure, ma'am. And then we're approaching 8 o'clock. So I want to be respectful of everybody's time. So please go ahead and you'll be the last speaker.
The mayor and council are listening to this tonight to hear our complaints. And if not, why not?
Sure. Yep. No, great question. And yes, actually, there are two members of council in the back of the room who have been listening in on the conversation this whole time. And one thing that I always follow up with is to let folks know, and for folks who weren't here too, this presentation that we've given, as well as the Zoom video for this whole conversation tonight, is going to be uploaded to this project's webpage on ovprojects.com. We've had commissioners from the Planning and Zoning Commission listening in on Zoom. We have a Planning and Zoning Commissioner in the back of the room as well. So, yes, they absolutely were listening, and we will make it available for them to go back and watch at their leisure. So I appreciate everybody's time this evening. It sounds like it's raining, so hopefully if you've got an umbrella, I hope you do. If you have more questions, of course, as I said at the outset, staff and the applicant will be here afterwards, and we'll be happy to answer any other questions you may have. For you folks on Zoom, I realize that's not quite as helpful, but please, if you have questions or comments, send them to our Constituent Services Coordinator, Jessica Hind, at the email address ask@orovalleyaz.gov. So with that, I appreciate everybody's time, and have a great evening.
You always have a smile on your face. I do appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate, you know, the work. The only question I have for you is this. I buy a property. It's commercial. What makes me entitled to change is the high density.
Why do you have to do high density? Why don't you do it differently so you don't have so much problem? And you're keeping it from us. I mean, I think I did research on all the rentals. Your information from 2020 is really off, but that's because it's 2022. So the average price now is $1,450, $1,460 for one bed, $1,600, $1,700, even up to $2,500, which, you know, your point is more rent instead of buy. I don't believe young people, I think older people. I can't.
That's not what Next Metro tells me about their typical. I mean,